Back up top, shot through traffic, save made. Follow-up try, that one hits a body in front, and a score! It's a score! It's a score! And the Ice Bears have a 4-3 lead with 30 seconds remaining in the hockey game. Oh, what a hit! Welcome to the SPHL in Knoxville! Comes in on the right side, through the right circle, taking it and fed across, they score! Oh, yes! And the Ice Bears win 3-2 in overtime!
Welcome in to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. My name is Joel Silverberg. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the KIB podcast, whether you're doing so on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or on Spotify. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. So, history made and not the kind that Knoxville was looking to make this year, but the Ice Bears are out of playoff contention for the first time in the 22-year history of the franchise. The only other time the Ice Bears did not compete in the postseason was when it was not held due to the cancellation of the 2019-20 season because of the COVID-19 pandemic. So, Knoxville going to have an earlier offseason this year than usual. Obviously not the outcome that anybody was hoping for, not the outcome that anybody expected. Obviously the season did not get off to a great start, but for a while it really did look like the ship had kind of turned around. And if you recall, Knoxville started the season 0-6. Brent Clark resigned as head coach. Andrew Harrison took over, won his head coaching debut, and then after dropping the next two games after that, then won 7 of the next 8. And suddenly Knoxville was 8-9 on the season, one game away from getting back to 500. They had won 5 games in a row and had found themselves in 8th place. And it was starting to look like that, hey, Knoxville, you know, maybe they're going to be able to compete and find a way to string some games together. And, you know, maybe making the playoffs won't be the biggest hurdle. And then Knoxville lost 13 games in a row, with 4 of those coming in post-regulation, 3 overtime losses, a shootout loss. Knoxville finally ended the skid towards mid-January. Had a really good February. Knoxville went 6-4, almost went 7-3, and found themselves climbing back in to postseason contention. And then at the end of February, Knoxville has a 4-1 lead against Huntsville, loses the game 5-4. Goes on the road the next night, loses 12-3 to Roanoke. So, and then after that point forward, you know, Knoxville bounced back the following night and beat Roanoke in overtime at the Berglund Center. And since then has lost 7 straight games, all by 3 goals or more. And, it's just been a really bizarre season when you kind of look at certain things on paper and, it just hasn't been there for this team this season. And so, nobody's happy. It's not a matter of, you know, the organization being content. And while obviously the Ice Bears are incredibly grateful for the support that the community has given to the team this season, it has still been a really strong attendance year. As of right now, the team is still on pace for its 2nd highest ever attendance year in a season in franchise history. And so the Ice Bears are incredibly grateful for all of that. But and merchandise sales have gone well, and there's been a lot of, you know, fun specialty jerseys and jersey auctions have gone well. All those things are great. And those are things that are necessary in order to maintain having a team. But you know, if you know GM and President Mike Murray, you know, he's not happy with the results. And he, you know, former hockey player himself, played in this market, played in a lot of other markets, some bigger, some smaller, played in the NHL, played at the highest level that this sport has to offer. And, he's, you know, a competitive GM and wants to see his team win. It's been a frustrating year for the entire organization when it comes to the results. And so, the organization wants to do everything that it can to make sure that this doesn't happen in the future. But it is a very, contentment is not the word I would use to describe how the organization feels right now, and there are still 4 games left in the season, and the organization plans to use these 4 games to evaluate the guys that are here and how we can start working towards next season. And so, you kind of look at it in a positive light, and you've had some individual performances that have been fairly significant. I mean, obviously guys have been a little bit banged up at times. And so it's, you get to this point of the year, not everybody's 100% healthy. But I think you even look over the course of this losing streak that has taken place over the last three weekends, Tyler Rollo had maybe his best game as a pro back on February 15th. I thought he was seeing passing lanes really well, had a couple of assists, and he also had six shots on goal. So it wasn't just a matter of, you know, being, you know, at times I think this team has, you know, sometimes made that extra pass when it hasn't needed to. Sometimes you got to throw pucks on net. I thought that, you know, back during the home game against Fayetteville on March 15th, I thought Rollo was doing a really good job of that. And then the following night in Fayetteville, Davis Kirkendall kept finding his spots, was physical, winning puck battles along the boards, putting pucks in positions where guys could make plays. But then he himself kept getting to the net front, getting into good situations for scoring chances, had a really good look from the slot, just missed the right side post, then had a really good one-timer on the back doorstep. Ryan Kenny got across from right to left and made a really good save. And then eventually, because Kirkendall got to the net front, he redirects a shot. Kenny makes the initial save, doesn't know where the puck is. Kirkendall taps it in, kind of gets rewarded for an easier goal after working so hard throughout the course of the game. That was actually pretty funny because after that first period, Kirkendall came so close to scoring on multiple occasions. I went to the restroom during the intermission and a Fayetteville off-ice official came up to me and said, man, number 23, he's working so hard. He's going to get one before the night's over. And sure enough, he did in the third period. I thought Derek Osick obviously had a pretty big weekend during that Fayetteville weekend. He had four goals, and then he followed it up with a solid offensive showing in the Birmingham game on March 23rd. Put up a couple of points. Dawson McKinney, a goal and an assist the other night. And then that third line of Derek Dubé-Plouffe, Justin Levesque, and Cole McKechnie played, I thought, two overall pretty solid periods against Quad City on Sunday. I thought their first period, they were generating some decent looks and trying to accelerate the rush. And then in the third period, Knox was all over Quad City. And I get that part of that was because of the lead that Quad City had built. This past weekend, the second period was not kind to Knoxville. The Ice Bears were outscored 14-0, including being outscored 8-0 to Birmingham, or 6-0 in the second period, 8-0 at the end of the second period overall. But I think when you look at just what that line was able to do, I thought they were generating good chances. They were really aggressive on the forecheck, getting pucks out of the dirty areas, and it led to Cole McKechnie and Justin Levesque both scoring. Dubé-Plouffe got on the score sheet as well. Kyle Soper, I thought, you know, made a really nice play. He kind of fakes the shot, shoots it to the side of the crease. McKechnie gets into his position. And you've heard Andrew Harrison talk about this the entire season. Guys have to be working hard to get to their spots on the ice, getting into position. And Cole McKechnie did that. That led to his goal. Justin Levesque did that. That led to his goal, thanks to a nice pass as well from McKechnie. And then winning a puck battle behind the net that allows Dubé-Plouffe to get the puck out towards the opposite circle and find Soper at the blue line. And so you see individual efforts like this and individual performances like this that guys still understand they have to go out and be pro hockey players. And it's not going to make anybody feel better about the results. You don't want to see a 10-4 loss to Fayetteville or a 9-3 loss to Birmingham. It's unacceptable. These are not normal hockey scores. And so you're still seeing individual players go out and try to showcase, hey, I deserve a spot on this team next year, because the organization is wanting to send a message that it is going to be better next season, because this is not the norm. I mean, you're talking about one season of missing the playoffs in 22 years. And I know a lot of fans were frustrated about how last season went, you know, an early exit in the playoffs. Knoxville was the sixth seed, but it was a much deeper league last year comparatively to what we had seen in the previous few seasons. I mean, you normally aren't in a situation where if you're the sixth seed, you're one win away from home ice advantage. And that was the case last year for Knoxville. I mean, the Ice Bears had a 2-0 lead against Roanoke in the regular season finale, lost 3-2. And if they hang on and win that game, Knoxville is hosting Roanoke instead of going to Huntsville. Now, granted, you know, that if last season Roanoke won 8 out of 14 matchups against Knoxville. So if Knoxville holds on and wins that game, then you're talking about an even series split 7-7. There's no guarantee one way or another who wins that series. Would have been very compelling, considering, you know, you play each other 14 times, you split seven meetings each way, and then you face each other in the playoffs. That would have been a really fun storyline. But, you know, does it change the outcome of history? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe Roanoke beats Knoxville and still goes on to win the President's Cup. Maybe Knoxville finds a way to win the series and suddenly the entire semifinals look a little bit different. But, you know, we'll never know. But that's how close Knoxville was to having a really different outlook on that season. And even with Knoxville finishing in sixth last year, they still scored more goals during the regular season than any other team in the SPHL. So, and again, you had an MVP, you had three All-SPHL selections, and you had three of the top five goal scorers in the league with Justin McDonald, Dino Balsamo, and Bailey Conger. So you had two of the, the three reigning players of the month. McDonald won it in back-to-back months, and then Conger won it for March and April. So it was a really, it was a really talented team that just kind of fell short in a couple of areas. And so that, if that's like the worst that it gets over the first 21 years, you kind of look back and say, well, overall, it's a pretty impressive run. And it doesn't justify what happened this season. But the idea is that the organization is trying to send a message to players that it wants to keep for next season. And the message to incoming players, newcomers next year, where does Knoxville go in, the free agency market for other SPHL players that aren't protected and college guys that have just recently wrapped up their playing careers, whether they're looking for, a short stint this year, they're wanting to start fresh next year. Knoxville wants to send a message that this is not the norm and that the team is meant to be better, that the results are meant to be better. And everybody in that locker room right now knows that it just hasn't been good enough and guys want to be better. And it's unfortunate the way that it's played out this year and nobody's happy. So the organization is already working on it. And obviously that's hard to see right now with the results the way that they are and the fact that, you go out and you're seeing the team go out and you see the results being a little bit similar. Doesn't mean that there's not things happening behind the scenes. But sometimes in order to make improvements, those things are a little bit longer term. And so how do you go about doing that? Do you change up the scheme? Do you change up the system? Do you move some pieces around? It really just comes down to how things change from one season to the next. And we have seen whether there's, whether your team's coming off a championship or whether your team's coming off a tough season. It's very, very common that rosters are overturned a lot because guys decide, I want to go try to play overseas, or I want to try to go, try my luck in the ECHL, or some guys prefer, I'm going to drop to a lower level and I'm going to, maybe be a little bit of a bigger fish in a smaller pond. I mean, that's what Justin McDonald did this past year. Obviously, you win the league MVP. Clearly, he had the talent and the skill to play in the SPHL and just opted to stay in Columbus. And guys do that for different reasons. Some guys want to travel and see the world. Other guys are done playing. They want to try the pro hockey life and decide, I tried it. I love the sport, but I'm ready to move on to the next chapter of my life. That's the thing with this league. There's really no formula as to why guys leave teams or leave the league as a whole, because not everybody, it's not like the NHL where guys plan to play 10 to 12 or plus years. And then it's like, well, I've played out my career. I'm ready to retire. In this league, guys are, Anthony McVay was playing in the SPHL until he finished graduate school. And once he got his graduate degree, that was the same year that he retired. And so, not everybody goes the Jason Price route where they settle down in the community of the team that they play for, and then they have a second job and they settle down and they make that city their base of operations, and then they play more than a decade and a half. And, for guys that do that, it's great. Jason's had a really successful career. His family loves Knoxville, and he's obviously meant a lot to the fan base, and I think the fan base and the organization has meant a lot to him, but not every player does that. Not every player plays 10 plus years. And for guys that are looking to kind of figure out what they want to do, it's tough to say. And that's the thing. Sometimes the organization doesn't know until you get to the summer. And sometimes the writing's on the wall for certain guys. They make it pretty clear. There had been rumors about Huntsville's core last season that Rob Dara, Tyler Piacentini, Cy Nutkovich, there were rumors that all three of those guys were going to be done after last season. There's obviously no way to really confirm that. But then sure enough, that's what happened. Piacentini becomes the assistant coach. Nutkovich and Dara announce their retirements. And so, and none of those three guys are playing this season. So it kind of just goes to show that sometimes maybe sometimes you don't. And guys sometimes don't make decisions until you get later on into the offseason. And so what this team is going to look like next year it's going to be different, not just because it has to be different, but it's going to be different because guys are going to decide to do different things. Guys are going to decide to play in different leagues. They're going to decide to get into coaching. They're going to decide to, you know, kind of leave hockey and start a new role in their life in the next stage. And it's, you know, it's something that you kind of find out as the offseason goes along. And obviously, you know, the organization, meanwhile, is focused on the hockey side of it. It's not just a matter of, well, we're selling tickets, so we're happy. We're selling jerseys, so we're happy. No, everybody wants to see the team be successful. Everybody wants to see more wins than losses. And so I think it's really important to remember that, you know, the organization, and it starts with GM and President Mike Murray, is wanting to improve the win-loss record next year. It starts there. And so obviously he has to manage the business side of it. He has to make sure that, you know, tickets are being sold and jerseys are being sold. That's the part of running the business. But if you ask Mike Murray, and, you know, trust me, my office is right next to his, he's not happy with the way that the season has gone. He did not want to miss the playoffs this season. And it happened, and what's done is done now. And so, you know, Knoxville's loss on Saturday to Birmingham, that clinched a spot for Evansville. So Evansville sneaks into the playoffs. If the season ends today, right now they're the 8th seed. They could sneak into the 7th seed. It's got a couple of upcoming games against Pensacola this weekend, so things could change. They could win those two games and catch up to the Ice Flyers. Pensacola does have a game in hand, so we'll see how Jeff Pess's team does. But, you know, Knoxville misses the playoffs for the first time in its 22-year history. Macon eliminated as well. The Mayhem become the first team in SPHL history to miss the playoffs in three consecutive years. And now you've got Birmingham sitting at the top. They've built a three-point lead now over Peoria with just four games remaining. So Birmingham in the driver's seat. Peoria still has a say in that number one spot. If Birmingham can close out strong, then they control their own destiny for right now. Roanoke is sitting in the three spot with Fayetteville 2 points behind him. Quad City is not far behind. They're 5 points behind Roanoke. So, you know, a little bit more of an uphill battle, but Quad City just 3 points behind Fayetteville. So the Storm trying to use their recent hot stretch over the last 6 weeks to get into home ice advantage. Huntsville is only 2 points behind Quad City. So it's, you know, so there's a lot of shuffling that could go on between spots three through six. Pensacola is 8 points behind Huntsville. So it's, you know, at this point, Pensacola would have to win out and would need Huntsville essentially to bottom out in their final four games. Pensacola does have a game in hand over the Havoc. So while it's still mathematically possible that Pensacola could jump into the sixth spot, it's unlikely at this point. So you're really right now, you're looking at teams competing for spots one and two, teams competing for spots three through six, and then teams competing for spots seven and eight. So the postseason matchups are not set. There is a little bit of shuffling that could go on. And it has been interesting watching just how there's been so much shuffling there. I mean, Fayetteville was in first place for a hot minute back in January. They kind of leapfrogged with Birmingham, went back and forth. They had a 10-game skid. And now have recently started playing better hockey with the return of Simon Boyko. And it's been really interesting to see how all of that could shape out moving forward with, you know, does Fayetteville stay hot? You know, they had a really good win over Roanoke in Boyko's return. They got a nice win over Huntsville this past weekend. Come from behind win against the Havoc on the road. So I think you look at what the Marksmen have done lately and feel like, okay, maybe they're starting to, you know, get hot again at the right time. Roanoke, I think, has been really disciplined with how they've, you know, had to manage a strong forward group. I know a lot of Roanoke fans were upset about Anthony Sonato being let go. But at the same time, when you look at that forward group, a good forward was going to get released. Like, you can't play 18 forwards. You got to have some defensemen there too. And that's the thing too, is Roanoke, I think, has a solid decor, especially with what they've gotten out of newcomers, Aiden Gerdukas and Troy Quinn, you know, Roach, Alvo, McDonald, Pepe, you know, you've had some guys there. And that's another thing too. What if Mac Jansen is able to come back? If he's able to be activated off the IR, then, you know, that's another defenseman. Now, granted, you get that extra roster spot for the postseason, but, you know, Dan Bremner brought in a lot of new players, and several of them have stuck. You know, Greg Smith is still there. You know, Mateo was brought in. Sonata was released. And, you know, they lost Xavier Filion, too. So he, you know, opted to return home. And, you know, you still got, I think, a really, really solid forward group. And talking to a member of Roanoke staff recently, you look at the guys that have been there for a while. You look at the Mac Jansons and the CJ Stubbs and the Matt O'Days and the Josh Nenadals, guys that have been with the organization for a while, all those guys are bought in to what Dan Bremner is doing. And it helps when you win a championship, and it helps when you make the finals the year before. So you're talking about back-to-back deep postseason runs, one as an underdog, the other as, you know, an expected title contender when they were the four seed. But you look at the fact that you have a buy-in, and it's really, really easy to get rookies that are just fresh out of college to snap into being pros immediately, because you walk in and you see CJ Stubbs go out and have a 5-point night. You walk in, you see Mac Jansen have a hat trick. You walk in and you see Matt O'Day have, you know, moved up from defenseman to forward and have a multi-point night. Those are the sort of things that you put on a team's resume that when you bring in the new college kids late in the spring, that they say, oh man, like there's something's going on here. Like there's a positive culture here. So I think when you look at what Roanoke has done, it's impressive the way that, you know, for a stretch there in February, they lost a few games. They had guys on call up, and then they managed to, you know, kind of tread water until some of those guys came back. And they've started to compete at a high level again. Now a little too late for them to grab a top two seed, but I don't think Roanoke's really worried about it. They won the President's Cup as a four seed last year. So if they're in the three spot this season, I think fans are going to be just fine with that. I think Birmingham has, obviously they've been very steady the entire season. I think you've seen their skill on display. They have a lot of forward depth. They've had to move some guys around. They've had some call-ups, they've dealt with some injuries, but I think for the most part, they've been very, very consistent throughout the course of the season. Peoria has had to make some moves, but this has also been a really steady team, and they kind of hit a slump like in late November, early December. They started losing some games the first time that they actually left the Midwest. They had a bit of a small drop-off there, but they've been really steady. They've been hot, lost that game to Evansville over the weekend, but then got it back the following night. And so it's a team that's competitive. Obviously it's supposedly the Alec Hageman farewell tour version 2.0. But I think on top of that, you look at what Nick Latinovich has done, with, you know, more shutouts lately. He's got 7 on the year. He's played very good hockey in net for Peoria. Now but also it's the structure. You know, he's had a lot of shutouts, but some of them have been really, really light workloads. I mean, he had a 9 save shutout against Quad City a couple of weeks ago. And it's, you know, it's not fair to like take it away from Nick, but it really goes to show how Peoria is built as a team, where, yes, Latinovich is putting up good numbers, but the guys in front of him are also doing their part to put him in a position to do that, where his workload is lighter, because defensively they're preventing guys from getting shots on goal, and offensively they're just so relentless when it comes to puck control, the neutral zone trap, and keeping the puck away from their own end. And, you know, Alec Bear obviously is a former MVP. They've got, you know, Alec Hageman, I think, is having a really good season offensively. So they've got guys that have been with the organization for a while that are also bought in. You're just seeing more and more veterans like that. You look at, and going back to Birmingham, Carson Rose has been there for a while. Now he's the league's leading scorer. Drake Glover has been in the league before and has been a huge contributor after coming over from Fayetteville. Now you look at Fayetteville, okay, Boyko's back. They're playing well. They've got other guys. They just had to put John Monkovich on season-ending IR. That's an unfortunate loss for them. But Ryan Kenny, I think, has done a really admirable job in net, considering everything that happened with Connor O'Brien being put on the IR and then being put on team suspension after he started the season really, really well. Quad City starting to get better play out of Brett Moran and kind of seeing how their season shapes up. Let's see what happens. They were really snake-bitten by injuries this month and call-ups and dealt with some roster attrition throughout the month of March. But if Matt Ustaski comes back, that's really going to make them go. But they're still finding ways to win games even without him being out there. Still have Leif Mattson, Cole Golka, Mike Moran. But if Matt Ustaski, Dylan Fournier, if those guys come back, then I think Quad City has to feel pretty good about what it could do, could really make a splash. Like, I think you're looking at the top 5 teams in the standings right now, and all of them have the talent and the ability to make a deep run. With Huntsville, I think they're starting to have that core come together. Obviously, you're trying to rally around the loss of Dom Procopio. You've gotten a really good asset out of Buster Larson this year. I think you're starting to see the Elkstams and Dylan Stewart. That line is playing very, very well. And Doug Elkstam was gone for a while, and you know, now he's been able to play at a higher level. So they're still, you know, still making some adjustments, still tinkering. They added Brett Humberstone and Jeremy Gervais on the back end. So you're looking at Huntsville and seeing, you know, nothing about them really jumps off the page, but they do everything pretty well. They have good goaltending with Brian Wilson and Mike Robinson. They still have good defensemen, even with Procopio not being there, and guys that they trust, guys, you know, like Matt Duran, Mason Palmer, Alex Kilcheski. And so overall, what they have in their foundation, I think, is pretty sound. Pensacola is a team that can get hot in a big way in a hurry. Houston Wilson was just named the player of the week. So you're kind of going down the list here and seeing, okay, you got Garrett Milan, you got Joseph Widmar, Mitch Atkins has been the player of the week this year. You have Ivan Bondarenko, who continues to pile up assists. You have Malik Johnson, who is tough and is willing to be, you know, the physical player out there as well. Sean Golka is not afraid to drop the mitts. Lucas Hermann has some skill. And so you see these guys and you see, okay, well, they've got a good four lineup. And now it's just a matter of, okay, can they put it all together? And then you look on the back end. Cooper Jones finally comes back from the ECHL. Nick Leitner is experienced, a really solid player that has Division I experience. Zach Hermann, incredibly skilled with the puck on his stick. Taylor Egan has been a staple back there. Jordan Henderson, a guy that was here last season. And then in net, Steven Mundinger, his numbers have continued to get better as the season's gone on. So you kind of look at Pensacola, and aside from what happened against Macon over the weekend on Saturday, you always have to know that Pensacola is pretty dangerous. And with Evansville, I think they deserve a lot of credit when it comes to how they have lost so many guys to the ECHL. They've lost a lot of really good players over the course of the year. You know, Bear Gendanov looked like he was going to be an all-SPHL selection, gets called up, and now he hasn't been around. And there's been a lot of stability within the lineup, and those guys are starting to figure out how to play together and play better together. Brendan Harrogate, you know, now in his second season, that's a guy that, you know, who coming off a strong rookie year, he has started to pick his game up just a little bit more over the last couple of weeks. Had a 3-point game against Pensacola. Then he had 3 points this past weekend. So, 3 points in two games across the previous two weekends. And so you look around the rest of the lineup and you see Scott Curtin. How important is he for what they want to do? And then Miles Abbott has been a guy that I think has a lot of potential. I think he can always be really dangerous with the puck on a stick. And Vadim Vazhonkin has been really, really key for what Evansville has done during the stretch at times, where he just seems to contribute timely offensively and then is doing things in the back end. And even when you're not seeing him contribute on the score sheet, he's doing a lot of the little things really well. But especially for when it all kind of started, when Evansville needed to start putting together wins, you saw him contributing in a big way, like in the late January win against Birmingham, you know, coming away with that 3-assist performance and then the 2 assists against Quad. And then it's, you know, a timely goal here or there. And so you always feel like he's involved with a lot of plays. For a guy that only has 20 points on the season, you feel like you're calling his name a lot. And a lot of that has to do with how well he does a lot of the little things. And so Evansville keeps finding a way, despite the fact that they just don't have this, you know, giant, you know, lineup of guys where it's all these 50-point scorers. And then obviously getting Cole Ceci back, that's the thing too, is, you know, they got hot for a while because Ceci was in net and was, you know, winning games for them after they were losing all these scorers and they were having to win all these low-scoring games. And then he goes to the ECHL and he's gone for a couple of months. They continue to find way to scrap out wins together. And then Ceci comes back. And so now it kind of becomes a matter of, can Cole Ceci steal a playoff game? Can he steal a playoff series? Like, can he put two good nights together and ruin somebody's season in the first round? And obviously, you know, it's a little bit more than that. You know, you get into the playoffs and the best players are going to shine. And so if the season ends today and it is Evansville against Birmingham, Evansville's played pretty well against Birmingham so far this season. You know, who wins out? Does Cole Ceci, is he really going to deny Carson Rose and Drake Glover and Nikita Kozarev and this high-powered offense that Birmingham poses? If it's Peoria, is he really going to stop, you know, Alec Bear and Alec Hageman and all, you know, just the talent that Peoria has up front? And so, you know, it's kind of like, who wins out? But that's the matchup you're looking into, especially when you get into that stage in the postseason, the deeper teams are trying to find ways to win games and win series and who's healthiest when it comes to that time. So all 8 teams that are in the postseason this year kind of have their own interesting story about how they're getting better when we get closer to the end of the season. So you know, the top 2 teams, you got these 2 high powered offenses. The bottom 2 teams, you've got goaltenders that are, you know, you feel like you're getting an enhancement at goaltender here down the stretch. And then for all these middle of the pack teams, You've got you've got some question marks, but at the same time, it feels like there's more positive than negatives about each one of those teams. So I think it's one of the deeper playoffs that we've had with more parity when you look at teams 1 through 8, but especially like teams 1 through 5. It doesn't feel like there's only 3 or 4 teams that realistically can put it all together and win it this year. And, you know, and it's not meaning disrespect to a specific franchise, but last year, talking to people around the league, I did not talk to a lot of people that were very confident in Peoria going on to win the title, even though they were the number one seed. Just a lot of people kind of felt like they could see things that maybe from a matchup standpoint weren't going to, play as well in their favor. And those things kind of ultimately led to Roanoke with their, just ability to be able to make big plays in the clutch and go on the road and win a game in Peoria to, end the season for the Rivermen. And, Roanoke went on to do that again to Birmingham. And so, the seeding sometimes doesn't always tell the story. I think this year, maybe it has just a little bit more, because I think this Peoria team is better than last year's Peoria team. I think up front, they've got more talent. They've got more scoring depth. I think they're finding ways to limit chances for their opposition. And I think, they've got a goaltender that's playing with a ton of confidence right now in Latinovich. And you can look at it and say, oh, well, some of his shutouts, he's got all these shutouts that are less than 15 saves that he has to make. It's also true, but it's also not his fault. And so, from a statistical standpoint, if you want to get into a goaltender of the year argument, that's probably where it comes a little bit more into play. But from a team standpoint, from a wins and losses standpoint, I mean, it would be hard to argue that Latinovich might not be the most confident goaltender going into the postseason right now, because he feels like he has, 5 other goalies out there the entire game with him, because Peoria limits shots against night in and night out. And so I think Peoria has a better team this year. Even if they're the 2 seed, I would give them a better shot to win it this season than last year when they were the number 1 seed. Roanoke, I feel like their chances are just as good as they were last year. I think they've got a competitive team with a winning culture, and now they've got a group of guys that have won a title before. Fayetteville, I mean, last year they were the 7 seed, and now they're starting to get better as the season goes on. Do they get Cameron Cook back? How do they handle, some of the guys that are still on call up, guys that are, they've gotten some really good players back. Obviously that, Boyko is going to be the guy that is the driving force behind it, but they have a decor as well that can really be there. Quad City, like I said before, Eustaskia and Fournier are back in the lineup. I think they believe in Brent Moran right now. Every team just kind of has something that maybe feels a little bit deeper about this postseason. Quad City is the 5 seed right now. Last year, Evansville was the 5 seed. And, granted, Evansville got dealt a serious blow. Trevor Gorsuch leaves right before the end of the season. He's not there for the playoffs. So you look at it in that end, and it kind of felt like it was a matchup that was really advantageous for Roanoke in the first round. This year, Fayetteville and Quad in the 4-5 matchup, a repeat of what we saw 2 years ago. I mean, that could be anybody's series, like Simon Boyko against Matt Eustaski, Ryan Kenny against Brent Moran. It's a really enticing first-round playoff matchup if that's what we get. But especially if both of those teams are healthy and 100%, it makes it even more enticing. But honestly, it feels like a semifinal matchup if both those teams, like if Fayetteville gets Cameron Cook back, Quad City gets Matt Eustaski back, then it doesn't feel like a first-round playoff matchup. Those feel like two teams that both should be expected to get beyond the first round. So I think there's a lot more parity this year than what we see in a normal year when it comes to the President's Cup playoffs. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen and subscribe. And be sure to tell an SPHL hockey fan you know about the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast. Ice Bears against Huntsville this Friday and Saturday. So be sure to listen to the call on 92.5 WKCE and on the Knoxville Ice Bears game day app. I'm Joel Silverberg. Thank you again for listening to the Knoxville Ice Bears podcast.